So first there was Cleo, and then came Jonah, and finally Bono. Three cats who came along at just the right time for longtime Timaru Herald columnist Helen Brown. She became an international best-selling author when she told the story of Cleo, the cat who helped her family heal when her nine-year-old son Sam was killed by a hit-and-run driver in Wellington in 1983. And Jonah took over for Cleo just as Helen was diagnosed with breast cancer. And then Bono, a homeless foster cat with a terminal disease and a contagious zest for life. So Helen once again writes about the transformational power of opening our hearts to animals in her latest book, which is called Bono, The Rescue Cat Who Helped Me Find My Way Home. And Helen Brown is on the line with us from Melbourne. Hi there.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Good. We're sorry to lose you to Australia, Helen, but proud of your international success. Nice to have you back on air in New Zealand, though.
Oh, it's lovely to be there. And look, I get back to New Zealand as often as I can. I've got my sister in New Plymouth and lots of friends in Auckland and Wellington, so I'm constantly trying to get back there. But look, Jesse, just the thing I want to add, it wasn't a hit-and-run accident that Sam was killed in. He was run over, but the driver did stop.
And, thank you for clarifying that. Sorry about that, Helen.
Yeah, no blame.
Lest we have people tune out thinking, well, I'm not a cat person, this interview won't be for me. Despite having written about three cats, you weren't a cat person either, Helen.
Well, look, I still don't classify myself as a cat person, and it fascinates me, this big sort of drama that goes on about people saying whether they're cat or dog people. I'm actually an animal person. I've got some magpies out the front of the house who come and waddle out the door, up the front path every morning for a bit of chicken, and they eat it out of my hand. So, you know, I think all animals are wonderful, and the things they add to our lives, enhance our lives, are just incredible. And cats have just walked into my life, and I tend to just have an open attitude. And, you know, it's unusual for a dog to walk into your life, though I'm sure it can happen like that. But for me, at these times, it's always been a cat. And so I've said, okay, cat, come into my life. Let's see what's going to happen now.
And by the way, if people have thoughts on this topic, I'd love to hear from you. 2101 is the text number, or jesse@radionz.co.nz. Do you think you got lucky with those particular cats, or were you just open to what they had to give during those times?
Well, I ended up being incredibly lucky because each cat really was a healer for me and our family. And as you mentioned, when Sam died, and that was a long time ago, in 1983, just a few weeks before the accident, we'd been to see some kittens and on the way to Macra, and he saw this little black runt of a kitten, and he said, oh, Mum, please, please, I really want that cat. Oh, please, can I have her for my birthday? I'm going to call her Cleo. And I was stitched up, so I said yes. Mm-hmm. And in the interim period, he was run over, and our family was just decimated and our lives blown apart. And then one day, weeks after the funeral, this woman appeared on the doorstep with what I thought was just a toy in her arms, but it turned out to be this little kitten Sam had chosen. And Rob, Sam's younger brother, ran out and said, oh, Mum, it's Cleo. It's Sam's kitten. Welcome home, Cleo. So I knew we were stuck with that from that point. And look, she brought smiles into our household. And just so many people have emailed, possibly even thousands of people by now, telling me their stories of how animals have helped them and their families through the toughest times. Just 2 weeks ago, I think, I got an email from Germany, and a woman said her best friend's son had died of leukemia at the age of 6. I think it was 4 years ago. And they'd started reading Cleo's story in German to this boy's younger sister, who was only 4, and reading the story aloud to this little girl at night. And a little black kitten walked into their lives. And the little girl said, oh, please, can we call her Cleo? And the dad said, well, are you sure you want to? And she said, no, actually, I want to call it Samantha. So now they live in a house with a little black cat called Sam, you know, which is the name of my son. So it's amazing how the story just keeps reverberating. And, of course, the movie's going to be shot at the end of this year of that book.
Oh, I hadn't heard about that.
Oh, no, well, that's all go ahead. I think a lot of it's going to be filmed in Wellington and some in Auckland. The Don Barnett of, well, he's running his own production
now.
He's been behind the story for years and years, and I've always thought, oh, well, it's, you know, it's not going to happen. But he's got a fabulous script now by Jodie Malloy, who did the Jackie Brown Diaries.
Yeah, I know.
Hollywood-based director called Ben Lewin is attached. So they're pretty confident they're going to be filming this summer.
Oh, that's exciting for people who have read the book.
Yeah.
And for those who haven't, can you explain to our listeners how Cleo helped in those, what must have been really dark times?
Well, she was something, she was a presence there all the time and a very physical presence for Rob, who was, as I mentioned before, was only six. He had finally had something to hold, and he'd identified with this kitten because she too was separated from her siblings. And since Sam had died, Rob was too scared to sleep in the bedroom the two boys had shared. But with Cleo, he was able to go back and sleep in that room again because he had something to cuddle. She was just always there. And I think that's one of the things that people value so much about animals. Their love is unconditional. And she reminded us of what it is to be resilient, that life's tough. And you could see her having a wonderful time with an autumn leaf. And it kind of opened our hearts to realize that life is a very precious thing, you know, and I think we get so tangled up in our anxieties and our hang-ups that we forget to treasure the moment, and animals always do that.
And it was a very personal story for you, and yet it resonated with so many people. Have you worked out why that was?
Well, I think it's just a universal thing. Deep down, we're all human. We all have to cope with loss in our lives. I mean, you don't get to midlife without having some major loss. And we don't talk about it, and we're not very prepared for it. And I think perhaps this book, wrapping it up around a kitten and how that helped us let go and step forward into a different phase, I think perhaps that's why the book's now in, I don't know, 17 languages and something. 2 million copies around the world. It's been incredible, really.
And Cleo lived a very long life too.
So I
have to ask about the end of her life, how you ever let go of such a special cat and managed to open your heart again to a new one.
Well, I swore we would never have another cat. And by now I should know that it never pays to swear. Mm-hmm. And we went for maybe 2 or 3 years with no cat. And then I got this diagnosis of breast cancer, and that was a bit of a bore. And when I came out of the hospital after the mastectomy, my sister Mary came over from New Plymouth and helped look after me. And she went for a walk one day and she said, oh, I've just been somewhere and I've seen something, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. And of course, you can't say that to someone who's a journalist.
Yeah.
So I was pulling off into the car alone, and we went down to this pet shop, and there he was, this little white kitten climbing up the wire, and he had these huge blue eyes, and he looked at me and put his paw out through the wire, and he chose me. That was it. Jonah came home. That's 10 years ago now. And again, he was a nuisance. He was diving down the toilets and climbing up the curtains. But he was such a great healer. He got me laughing again, even though it hurt my stitches. And so he also helped me through a time when my older daughter, Lydia, was deciding she'd had enough of university studies and she was going to go off to Sri Lanka to become a Buddhist nun. And he kind of helped me through the loss and anger of that. Of course, I didn't need to worry nearly as much as I did. Mm-hmm. Philip says he lost his hair over all of that episode, but
I mean, you felt in a way that Jonah helped you change your definition of love and acceptance.
Yeah, and I think all cats do in a way. And with Bono, it was a very similar thing. I mean, we'd been married 22 years. The kids had all left home. And I went through this very weird phase where I wondered, I'd spent so long looking after kids, and now we've got a couple of granddaughters, Desi, you know, and you spend so long, like if you're walking down a supermarket aisle and someone goes, "Mom," you jump out of your skin because it's for you, and you forget who you ever were. And so some people, I mean, you could just as well go to the Chatham Islands or some remote place. I felt this terrible need to go away and find out who I really was after all those years, not just mum or the grandmother or the cat owner even. And for me, that place was New York. Because where better else to be alone than a city full of millions and millions of people?
Yeah.
So that's where I headed, yeah.
I want to talk about New York. And if people are just tuning in, by the way, I'm talking to Helen Brown, who, well, you know, she was a columnist at the Timaru Herald for a long time, and she's in Melbourne now.
Actually, Jesse, I have to add one or two other newspapers as well. Yes. I was working for the Auckland Star and the Sunday Star. I think that column was syndicated to 7 papers through New Zealand. So I've got so many wonderful readers there from that period.
Lots of friends too who are getting in touch, and people who have connected with you over the years. I've just heard from an old babysitter who I promise I'll forward her email because she's lost touch. But Helen is the author of Bono, the rescue cat who helped me find my way home. And Bono is a New Yorker too.
He is. It's very interesting. I just swore I was going to escape cats altogether and go and live in New York and maybe never come home, because I know some glamorous people there, and I thought maybe I belonged with the glamorous people. So off I tootled, but I was talked into fostering this homeless cat. See again, why didn't choose this cat? So I thought, well, if I'm going to have to foster a cat, it'll be a sleepy old tortoise shell, 100 years old, that only needs feeding, so I can go off to all the Broadway matinees and not bother. And I was with Lydia, which she came with me for the first week. We went to this animal shelter, and animal shelters in New York are nothing like the ones we used to have in New Plymouth when I was growing up. They were places of death and fear, but this was a wonderful skyscraper with different floors for different animals. And anyway, we get there, and the cat whisperer guy, who's covered in tattoos, he says, "Oh, I'm so glad you've come for Bono." What's a Bono? I thought, well, if we followed him into the cat room, and I could see a little tortoise shell that was just perfect, just what I had in mind, and suddenly this wild thing flew across the air in front of us, a hurtling ball of fur, and that was Bono. Anyway, I was trying to talk my way out of it, but Lydia fell in love with this cat because it had a crazy punk haircut, because it had very long hair and it had been riddled with fleas, and the only way they could sort of treat it was to put it under anaesthetic and shave most of its body. So it was a very strange looking cat. But Bono, he reminded me of the Christchurch earthquake scenario. He was a victim of Hurricane Sandy, and he'd been washed up on Long Island. No one knew where he'd come from, what his previous life was, and no one claimed him. And it made me think of all the animals that were also left in very difficult circumstances after Christchurch. And 18 months ago, I was asked to go to the tsunami region in Japan, because people thought I might have something to say to them about grief. And my goodness, it was beyond anything I'd ever experienced. These vast tracts of land that had just been wiped clean. And it was the same thing. Animals had completely disappeared. And, you know, of course we count the human toll, but there's this massive animal toll that gets unnoticed most of the time. And Bono was part of that. And on top of that, he had advanced kidney failure, so nobody wanted him at all. And John said to us, look, He's going to die in this shelter. Just give him a little holiday. Just take him away to your wherever you're staying, which was an absolute dive, I have to add, and give him a break from this place. He's finding life tough here. So we took him back. And look, honestly, I thought, well, we'd keep him till Lydia went back because she was so in love with him. But after she left, I started to really fall in love with him too. He had such a sweet nature. And I saw elements of myself and this cat who was feeling a bit scruffy, a bit unwanted, didn't know what his future was. And we bonded. And I thought, oh, we've got to find you a home. And so I started blogging on Huffington Post. And I later found out that blog was read by 22 million people. And I was getting all these emails from all over the world saying, oh, we love your kitten. But you would have no idea how many people have allergies to cat fur or live with someone who has an allergy to cat fur, or they live in Iceland and they can't come to New York to collect this beautiful little cat. So it was a very challenging task to find a home for Bono.
We're not going to give away the ending of the book, by the way. But one of the things that makes Bono so unique is, although he is dying, he is very full of life.
And the other thing, he was bursting with gratitude. I've never seen such a thankful animal. It was like, oh my goodness, you've got a fridge. Wow, what is this? You know, oh, I can sit on your knee. He woke up every morning just so happy to be there and such a gracious nature that I thought, that's an interesting place to come from. And it got me thinking about all the things I have to be grateful for, my wonderful family and husband and life here that I have. And it made me think, what on earth was I doing thinking New York might be the place? I mean, I did sort of run it past Philip, would he like to come and live in New York and bring Jonah with him, and maybe we could set up a household with Jonah and Bono and he could maybe get a job there, but that didn't quite work out, you know. So, yeah, and I think while I was there, actually, the Boston bombings happened and the whole city changed an atmosphere, and it became a very fearful place. And that was when I checked the window at the fire escape just out above my bed, and it had no lock on it. And those two crazy brothers were still running loose, and they were expecting them to come to New York. So, you know, when you're alone, ideas go round and round in your head and get big, and you think, well, they could come up the fire escape and kill me tonight. And I thought, no, I don't care. I've got a cat. He's going to protect me.
And in fact, on that day, Bono maybe sensed that you needed some support, right?
Yeah, oh, you've read the book. That's lovely. You know, a lot of interviewers, you get used to the fact that they probably haven't read the book, but you have. Thank you.
But Bono seemed to be saying, you're not alone. I'm with you.
That's right. So, you know, so much of how we feel is psychological, isn't it? It's not real. I wasn't really in danger, and I thought, well, even if I am, I've had a good life, and I'm going to give those boys a jolly good talking to before they blow me up.
Do you compare your cats to each other?
No, how could you? I mean, I don't compare my children to each other. They're all very strong individuals, and I don't think any of them would welcome competition.
Tell us about Lydia then. You mentioned her before. She came with you to New York, and I sort of sense that Bono maybe helped your relationship with her again in maybe the same way that Jonah had earlier in life.
Yes, yeah. Lydia was just coming out of her five-year I'm going to be a Buddhist nun phase, and it was quite a delicate time in our relationship because I have to say we've had a few ups and unders over her turning her back on everything that, you know, as parents we'd tried to give her in terms of education and Western life. And I was very nervous about how she was going to respond to New York because during her religious phase, she hadn't been going to theatres, she wasn't allowed to listen to music, showed no interest in art galleries. But when we got to New York, it was like watching someone being born. We went to MoMA Museum and she looked at Monet's art galleries. And I was just awestruck by her response to that. And then her response to Bono, he kind of did something for her. He brought out all this maternal instinct that I hadn't seen in her before. And she was the first person he bonded with. And she was sleeping on this awful black vinyl sofa in this terrible dive that we were living in Midtown. And one of the first signs that he gave that he wasn't completely feral was when I woke up one morning, he was sitting across the back of the sofa looking down at her. And it was just a miraculous thing to watch. And when she left, she was absolutely devastated and in tears. She couldn't bear to leave Bono. She didn't mind leaving me, but leaving this cat. And I said, why are you crying so much? And she said, it's life. It's life so fragile. And I didn't fully understand really what she was meaning, but I think she was linking back to her Buddhist philosophy, you know, that because we're all here for such a short time, including cats, it's not that we need it to go on forever. We need to absolutely treasure every day that we're here. And that's what Bono was doing.
My last question is there anything else we can learn from cats, Helen?
Well, I think they're very good at letting go. And forgiveness. And I think forgiveness is so important. It's important for our own health. You know, I've got some kind of Scottish ancestry, I think, where, you know, we hold on to a grudge, we pretend we're tough, but we're not. We're crumbling inside. And actually, I do quite a lot of meditation now. Lydia runs meditation classes in Melbourne, apart from being a clinical psychologist now. And I do find meditation very helpful with that. Letting go, forgiving others, forgiving ourselves for our mistakes. And somehow that's very cleansing. And I think also realizing that we do have power. I think the way the world is at the moment, with all this technology just pouring into our phones and our heads, we think we're just part of a great shoal of humanity. But one cat can make a difference. Well, imagine the difference one person can make if they will claim their own power.
What a treat to talk to you, Helen Brown. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you for yours, Jesse. Lovely to talk to you too, Hamilton boy.
Indeed. Bono, the rescue cat who helped me find my way home, is the name of Helen's book. And real pleasure to have her on today as well. Thanks, Helen.